Well, today on Inside Utah Politics, Governor Spencer Cox's perspective on the legislative session, what he thinks lawmakers did well, and what he could veto now that the session has wrapped. A chance to be a fly on the wall. We will take you behind closed doors to see where lawmakers' heads were in those final hours. And life after sign of die, how the laws passed this year are already making waves through the public.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
I'm Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. The 2025 general session of the Utah legislature is over. Now, the fate of the scores of laws passed this year rests with this man. We've got the chance to sit down with Governor Spencer Cox to get his take on how this year has gone, what work still needs to be done, and even which bills he could veto. Governor, thank you for joining me today. So, just broadly, how has your session been? I mean, if I can just ask you broadly.
Yeah, it's been a great session. We have a wonderful relationship with the legislature. We always try to grade the sessions. I think we're at about an A- right now. I don't know if we've ever had an A, but that's pretty good as far as grading a legislative session. We're not done yet, but we're close, and it feels like we're in really good shape.
Okay, why do we call it an A minus? What makes it an A minus?
Well, look, what makes it an A minus is I didn't get everything I wanted, and that never happens. Like, it's not supposed to happen that way. It's okay that I don't get everything I wanted, but we got a lot of what we were hoping for, and we're on the same page with most things, and that means making life easier and better for the people who call Utah home.
Very good. Let me start with a question I ask you every year,
yes.
And every year you gave me the same answer,
yeah.
So I fully expect you'll
give you a different one this year.
No, I fully expect you'll give me the same one, which is, what will you veto?
Yeah, I'm going to veto so many things.
You heard it. It's on the record.
But I'm not going to tell you what yet.
Is that for real? No, give me the serious answer.
No, it's not for real.
Okay.
We'll sit down and look. I do think there will be some vetoes this year, but I'm not sure exactly what. We've got some bills that we're looking at, and we'll go through the process we always go through. Again, just because I don't like a bill, that doesn't mean I'm going to veto it. There are lots of things I don't like, but we negotiate hard to try to get them in a better position, and vetoing is a little different than voting on a bill, and so we'll give them real consideration. There's a reason they passed. The people's representatives have passed them. I respect that, but I have my job, my role to play as well.
So there will be some vetoes, but not even a broad, like, taxes or energy or elections or anything in that category.
Nothing broad like that. We, again, really proud of some of those things we were able to do. I love the elections bill that we were able to get done. I think it's important to help restore faith in elections. Some people who have lost faith. Now, there are some people who should know better who have been lying about our elections, but we should make it better, and we should always make it, we should always make it more secure, which is what we're doing. I love the energy bills. I'm really proud of what we were able to accomplish there. It's something we've been working on. It was one of our top priorities, and the legislature really came through with Operation Gigawatt and helping us to double the energy production in our state over the next few years.
Okay, let's dig into one of the big themes I see out of this session is control, legislative control over cities, legislative control even with the judiciary. We saw the Beehive Development Agency, which I know you were a fan of, but that really kind of blew up in terms of people saw it as the state coming in to kind of usurp control. Do you feel like the legislature has gone too far in some of these control pieces?
Well, that will be part of my review as I look at those bills. Again, we do have checks and balances for a reason. The judiciary is one of those checks on the legislature and on the executive branch. I'm one of the checks on the legislature. That's how all of this is supposed to work. I'm a check on the judiciary in that I get to nominate judges and the Senate gets to confirm them. And so that's the way this is supposed to work. It was never intended that the legislature should always get their way, and so we will definitely look at those and see what's appropriate and what's not. When it comes to the Beehive Development Agency, that was one where there were a couple mistakes made. One, it came out way too late in the session because there was drafting going on. By the way, it was not just my bill; it was the Speaker and the President. We had all agreed that we needed to go this direction. Number two, it should never have had that preemption of local control. As soon as that came out, I said, yeah, we need to take that out, and we did, but everybody was upset when they saw it in there in the first place. It never should have been in there in the first place. So, but by the time we got it out, it was too late in the session
to fix that. The sponsor agreed the messaging got away. That's right.
Yeah. That was part of it. So we'll come back. We can fix that. The other issue with that one, just quickly, is this pushback that there are too many of these authorities all across the state now doing this work. I absolutely agree with that. Part of the intention of this bill that people didn't understand, this wasn't just another authority. It was an attempt to bring all of those authorities back together and give them some oversight that they don't have right now, because I agree with some of the criticisms that are out there.
Interesting. Okay, let's talk about tax cuts, because the legislature has passed an income tax cut that's sitting on your desk. You didn't get all of what you wanted in the Social Security tax income cut. How are you feeling about that?
Well, I feel really good about the piece that we did get, and that is that about 90,000 Utahns will not be paying Social Security tax once this bill gets implemented. That's great. That's what we were hoping for. Now, we wanted all of it. We didn't get all of it right now. So, yeah, I think that's a mistake. I wish we would have been able to get all of that. And so we'll look at those other pieces. But I'm grateful that we were able to get the piece that we wanted. That will help seniors. And that was our goal this year, helping people on fixed incomes who have already paid taxes their entire life, giving them that tax break, something that the president supports, by the way, and something that he's trying to get in the federal bill.
Democrats took issue with the fact that they folded in child tax credits and care for businesses to create child care centers into this piece with the income tax cuts. Those two provisions passed on their own merit, passed the House, I should say. Is this another example where we fold things in so you have to vote on an overall bill even though you don't like the income tax cut, which is a major shift?
Sure, yeah. Well, we've been cutting income taxes every year, and we're responsible for the largest tax cuts in our state's history, $1.2 billion over the past 4 years, something I'm very proud of. The legislature does their thing with putting bills together, and so I'll let them speak to their decision on lumping those things together.
The other argument there is the average family might save $45 a year with the modest income tax cut. Why is that still worth it in your mind?
Well, that's the question, and that's why I was pushing to have those tax cuts come from Social Security, because the average senior would have saved $1,000 a year, and that is impactful, much more than $45 to a family. Now, I'm not downplaying that. $45 is $45, but $1,000 for my grandma, I will give up my $45 to give her $1,000 tax cut.
But the argument there from some lawmakers was that taxing this group would only help the wealthiest seniors, because we already don't have to pay Social Security tax for those who make under $75,000 right now, up to $90,000 when this bill goes
through. Well, and the counter argument to that is, if you look at that 5 basis point income tax cut, that benefits the highest earners far, far, far more than anybody at the bottom of that scale.
Very interesting. Okay, let's go back to that judicial reform piece. We saw big tensions this year, and everyone's saying, of course, there is always going to be natural tension between all of the branches of government, which you alluded to earlier. Do you believe that the legislature went too far? That's something the Judicial Council, led by Chief Justice Durant, said. Basically, this bill to put commissions or a commission of lawmakers to recommend judicial reforms on the ballot went too far. Do you agree with that sentiment?
Well, I always urge people to judge the legislature by the bills that pass, not the bills that are introduced. That bill did not pass in that form, right? And so there was backlash. I was not supportive of that at all. And again, I believe it's important to protect the independence of the judiciary, and that's something I'm committed to doing.
What do you make of how everything played out with the judicial branch this year?
Well, again, we'll be reviewing the bills that did pass, and then looking at those that did not, and seeing if we got that balance right. There's clearly some animosity and hostility between, at least from the legislative branch towards the judicial branch, and so I think that's why we saw those bills pop up. Right, it's not surprising that would happen. They disagreed with some of the decisions. I disagreed with some of the decisions by the judiciary. But just because I disagreed with them doesn't mean they're wrong or that they did something that they weren't supposed to do. That's how the system works, and I'm okay with that.
We've got one on injunctions. We've got one that limits third-party standing. Either of those on your veto list?
Certainly, I'll be looking at them.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, finally, I need to talk about this controversial fluoride bill that you haven't signed yet. We have made national news because of our passing of removing fluoride in our counties. Will you end up signing that?
I will end up signing that. Look, we've half the state has not had their water fluoridated. I grew up and lived and raised my kids in a place that doesn't have fluoride in the water. And so we ran this natural experiment. You think you would see drastically different outcomes with half the state not getting it and half the state getting it. I've talked to a lot of dentists. We haven't seen that. It's got to be a really high bar for me if we're going to require people to be medicated by their government. And what they also did was make it easier for families to get fluoride. If that's what you want to do, you can get it. So it's not a bill I felt strongly about. It's not a bill I care that much about, but it's a bill I will sign.
We'll leave it there. Governor Cox, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, still ahead on Inside Utah Politics, how the sausage is made. Join our team's conversation with lawmakers in the final hours of the legislative session. Every day of the general legislative session, Senate leadership offers us, the members of the local media, a chance to pick their brains about the goings-on that day. A handful of us pack into the Senate president's office to pose tough questions about the news of the day. At most, you'll typically see only a few seconds of those conversations, but today we thought it'd be valuable to show you what it looked like on the inside, the last day of the session, and to show you that it's not always so serious.
Senator McCown. We'll go here then here, right?
It's so popular.
Like Lindsay, come on. Let's get it. We're gonna do a selfie here.
Hey. Wait, was that Brian Mulahy?
Listen, you work in TV, you have to.
Hey, it's I've got a meeting. I've got to run.
Go ahead,
Adam. All right, let's go.
Let's have Adam, okay?
And President Adams.
Okay, all right.
People are aware of the auditor's concerns with legislative activities amendments. Senator Baldry has a substitute online. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that and whether there might be any movement in what the auditor is asking for.
And I think that's a great question. I haven't reviewed the substitute, I'm aware of it, but I think you look at it in the broader context. As we look out back, we have a new building that's being built. We're going to reshuffle office space, and we do want to look at office space on Capitol Hill. That's what we're doing with the legislation. But you've got to look at it in the broader context. I think some of the comments I've been seeing over the last couple of days are pretty unfortunate. Just to be clear, we're not removing the auditor from the state capitol.
We guaranteed her spot here.
Yeah, we guaranteed her. I went back. I know there's folks who say, well, that's not what the language says. I checked with John Cannon, who's looked at it, the attorneys that I have to rely on, and he's confident that it doesn't say that she's being removed from the Capitol. I think we read that differently, but, we're going to continue to work on it. We've been working on it for a long time, but I'll let you follow up.
In fact, it's really unfortunate she would say that, because she was told directly from, I think, you and I and others, there were three of us in the room, that we wanted her to stay in the Capitol. Mm-hmm. In her, if you look out the window at the top of the Senate building, she has 30 to 50 employees in the top of the Senate building. And they're here on the Capitol, so, she has a presence here on the Capitol and has a presence in the Capitol. So she's probably one of the largest users of space on Capitol Hill right now.
What's the, speaking of that broader picture, what is the overall plan for where you put people? Because the perception and the assumption, to your point, that they may be unfair is that the legislature is trying to take over all the space in the main Capitol.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point is we want elected officials in the Capitol, but I look at our own staff, our staff, our attorneys, our auditors, our fiscal analysts, they're not in the Capitol. The governor's staff, they're not in the Capitol. The Attorney General, about 99% of his staff are not in the Capitol, and we really want to make sure the policy is let's make sure that the constitutional officers are here, but let's try to make sure that we have the elected officials in the Capitol. It's good real estate, but that's what we're trying to do.
Well, she's an elected official too.
Yeah, and she's not.
We're getting her space in the Capitol. She'll have one.
Yeah, to be clear.
I read her comment as quoting me as a junior senator. So I have never said junior senators. We don't have junior senators in Utah. Every senator is duly elected. And whether that, I don't know what she's talking about when she says junior senators.
What is that?
Anybody here junior? I don't know how many bills to pass this afternoon, the last day of the session, so let's keep going if we can, okay?
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Senator Stevenson, do you have any concerns about your alcohol bill making it through the House at this point? And I'm curious about why you sort of acquiesced on the proximity piece when that seemed really important to you in the first version.
Senator Fillmore helped with that, didn't you?
I did, but her question.
You rejected the sub that he first put forward, or the amendment, I should say.
I felt that 85% of the bill was better than no bill. That's the reason that I acquiesced.
Other questions? This is the warm-up for 6 o'clock. We'll see you back at 6.
Thank you.
Well, we need to point out that lawmakers ultimately did end up scrapping the bill to move the state auditor's office. After all the public angst, they will likely revisit the idea next year after working on the bill with all involved. Now, let's move over to the House. As the larger chamber, they only offer this media availability once a week. Now, the final one for this year happened just hours before adjournment. Here's a look at what the Speaker and other leaders had on their minds heading into that final bit of floor time and how they characterize what they accomplished this year.
It really seems like this year the legislature flexed its muscle on a lot of things in terms of not just these policies that you've been touting here, but also there's been pushback about local control and whether the legislature is overstepping its authority with either the Beehive Development Agency legislation, Salt Lake City streets, things like that. You know, how do you care to address that?
Well, I would say we were on the Salt Lake City streets, the Salt Lake City public safety issues. We were reacting to our constituents on that. 100%. And I'm very grateful that Salt Lake City also came together and worked together collaboratively. Again, I felt like it was a win-win solution. We were able to work with Salt Lake City to find a solution forward. It's probably not the way that we would liked it to have been, and it's not the way Salt Lake City would have liked it to have been. But again, we're focused on good outcomes, and I think that was a good outcome.
But, you know, like even in case if there's a protest outside about the flag bill, you're telling certain communities or counties you can't fly certain types of flags.
Yeah.
You know, is that an example of, again, maybe too much control over everything?
Again, I just don't think the political flags and those types of things should be in our classrooms. I really don't. Let's focus on educating our kids. Let's focus on what government should be focused on, and that's serving the people, not making political statements.
Speaker, we talk a lot about the Utah way here and how the process of negotiating and trying to bring all the stakeholders to the table makes policy better.
Yeah.
But there were several examples of policy coming from the House, whether it was HB 300 addressing election security, or some of these immigration law enforcement bills that were, you know, there's lots of energy around them in the House, and then some people would say they got watered down in the Senate. So I'm wondering whether I'm wondering whether you think in these instances this process made policy better or was an obstacle to getting good policy across the finish line.
Brigham, you're married, I'm assuming.
Yes.
You know the art of compromise. And that's what I think is most important is, look, I don't think any side gets its way all the time. And so trying to find the ways to come together is what we do. Yeah, there's some things that I didn't love as part of the compromises. There's things that the Senate didn't love as part of the compromise, and I'm sure there's things the governor's office didn't love as part of some of the compromises. But working together is what I think we're really trying to focus on. A good example of that was with the judiciary and finding a pathway forward with the judiciary. You know, we're very grateful for the justices and the Chief Justice specifically for coming together and finding a pathway forward to benefit the citizens of the state. We're proud of that.
What do you feel like there's work left over for next session when it comes to elections and public safety? Is there work left over from this session because we didn't get there?
You know, I think we should always continue working to improve the process. And so, yeah, I think, you know, as we look at what we did, as we look to try to get those processes implemented, especially on elections, I have no doubt that those issues will continue to come forward and will continue to refine the process as we move forward.
What was it about this year, though? It did seem like there was a lot more conflict between the House and the Senate this year. Why was this year different?
Well, you know, It's a new House, it's a new Senate, and lots of energy all the way around on both sides. But, you know, conflict, that's the way the legislative branch is set up, right? And there's supposed to be that balance between the houses inside the legislative branch and the different bodies. And that's a good thing. That tension is healthy. And I'm very proud of our colleagues in the House. I'm very proud of our colleagues in the Senate. I feel like they managed that tension really well. Now we got, 6 hours left, still probably before it's all done and over with. You know, we'll see. Hopefully that continues.
This you is want to end at 10 p.m.?
Just
no. Okay. Yes.
Counting the hours.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get done early this year. So.
Please. Figure himself.
Yeah. Do we expect any surprises? Any last-minute things that will catch people off guard tonight?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be things that catch me off guard, so we'll all stay on our toes.
Always, always things that catch us off guard. Well, coming up, a Capitol Hill shakeup. Why West Valley Senator Daniel Thatcher says he's leaving the Republican Party. Stay with us.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, although the session may be over now, we've just started to see the impacts of what lawmakers have done. House Bill 267, the controversial law that strips public sector unions of the right to collective bargaining, is facing its first major challenge. Now, the Utah Education Association, working with other labor leaders to file a referendum to overturn the law. I was there when union leaders arrived to file their referendum.
Because our legislators and the governor did not listen.
Gathering outside the lieutenant governor's office, the head of the state's largest teachers union, the Utah Education Association, says the public outcry was clear.
We, the people, should be able to weigh in and have our voice heard by voting on the referendum to repeal HB 267.
Together with several public labor unions, the groups will look to repeal the law that bans them from collective bargaining. It was signed mid-session despite lots of pushback and a compromise that fell through.
What it really came down to were labor unions either that reneged on the deal, that said that they were going to do one thing and did something different, or labor unions that said that they were neutral on the deal and then went behind and told their people to continue to oppose it.
The bill's sponsor, Representative Jordan Tusher, says he's not surprised by the repeal effort.
Maybe that public labor unions don't want that, but that's not what we're here to do. We're not here to represent just public labor unions, but represent all workers, all taxpayers across the state.
Well, Utah's Senate President Stuart Adams said this is part of the process, and he encourages voters to thoroughly research the issue at hand to make an informed decision. Getting the referendum on the ballot will be a heavy lift. The groups have to get over 140,000 signatures in several of the state's Senate districts over the next 40-ish days.
We have a lot of our members who were calling for a referendum, and this is the next step in the process.
Well, the groups are confident that the public will repeal this law, which could be on the ballot in 2026. Now, as for lawmakers, they say this referendum is all part of the process. Well, with that being said, there was a bit of a snafu with the filing of the necessary documents. The unions and the lieutenant governor seem to disagree over when they can do that, but the referendum efforts will kick off in earnest soon. We also saw a major shakeup on Capitol Hill in the final days of the session. That is West Valley City Senator Daniel Thatcher has left the Republican Party. Now, Senator Thatcher is affiliating with the Forward Party, a national centrist political movement founded by former Democratic presidential hopeful and tech businessman Andrew Yang. Now, the Utah chapter ran its first candidates just last year. Thatcher has had frequent spats with his fellow Republicans over the last year, and now he says he feels they've lost touch with the voters.
Amendment D was one of the biggest things I've seen that directly attacked the rights of the public, but we've also gone after education funding, we've gone after labor, we've gone away from the people.
Well, Forward Party leadership says they're thrilled to have Thatcher and that he aligns with their values. The Utah GOP tells us they see changing affiliation from Thatcher as a reflection of his changing beliefs. Well, with this move, Thatcher becomes the only third-party member of the state legislature. He's up for re-election in 2026. He just ran an unsuccessful campaign for county council this past election cycle. Well, that does it for Inside Utah Politics today. Thank goodness the session is over for those of us who cover it. Now, don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure you reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow along with me on social media. I'm on X, Blue Sky, and Threads, Lindsay on Air, and that's on Instagram too. Lindsay is spelled with an A. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. Well, thanks for being with us, everyone. We will see you next week.